Hello, and welcome to an all-new edition of Content Talks, the podcast about content strategy. I am your host, Christina Halverson. And after a sort of unintended summer hiatus, which was actually lovely and productive, hopefully for you as well, I am delighted to be back on the air with this week's guest. I have with me today James Mathewson. James is the global search lead for IBM.com. and the co-author of Audience Relevance and Search, Targeting Web Audiences with Relevant Content. Did I get that right, James?
Yes, you did. It's Good. A long title.
It is. Well, welcome.
Thank you.
James, you and I first met, did I track you down? Did I stalk you on LinkedIn?
A little bit.
Yeah.
But that's okay.
That's kind of how I tend to make friends, is with the whole stalking on LinkedIn thing. But you are actually here in Minnesota. You telecommute to IBM. And we actually met about halfway at a lovely little diner whose name I forgot. Oh, no, wait. You came up here first.
Yes, we met at a coffee shop.
Yes,
first.
You made the long drive up. And at that time, you were editor-in-chief of IBM.com. And that was sort of we had a really great long talk about that. And that was actually sort of the first time that anyone had introduced to me the idea of like a web governance board. Do you want to just talk a little bit about your past role as editor-in-chief of IBM.com and kind of what that looked like? And then we can talk a little bit about your transition into your current position.
Sure. So we had a lot of inconsistencies and problems with our content in IBM, which for a large organization that has all kinds of brands and business units that grew organically, that's not uncommon.
Weren't you dealing with 4 million URLs at the time?
Something like 4 million, and now it's up to 7 million, but we won't get into that.
That's a project. In 3 years, it's up to 7 million?
Yeah, we have a problem, and so the first thing you have to admit the problem, and then you have to start dealing with it, which we are dealing with.
Good.
But yes, so at the time the we didn't really have really good resources for content teams to develop the kind of content we needed developed for our clients, and so I started this board. Well, I worked with other people to start this board to develop standards together around the same table, and then ultimately bless those standards, publish resources to help people write to those standards, and not just write, but design and develop and deploy websites to those standards, and then once that work was done and the site was functioning well and everything, it was like, what is our next big challenge? And the next big challenge was that nobody could find our content because we didn't optimize it for search.
Okay, so. wait, though, back up, because
yeah, okay.
you were like, yeah, so we put together this global board and we set some standards. And then once that work was done and everything was running smoothly, with our 4 million pages, we just went, on to the next thing. And then, can you talk a little bit more in depth about what that process looked like and maybe some of the specific players you had on the board and what some of the opportunities and challenges were during that process?
Yeah, so the board was two-tiered. We had managers of web development teams, and then we had the actual content strategists. I guess they weren't called content strategists at the time, but that would be the best title for them now. They were people who were in charge of publishing web content for their brands or business units. And so those were the people, sort of the foot soldiers, who helped develop all of the resources we needed developed. And their managers then, if there were any blockers or issues, would take those problems to their executive chain and get them resolved. And ultimately, the managers were the ones who set the priorities for what we did next and what the overall strategy was in terms of the standards that we needed to develop.
So how many people were on this board?
Well, there were about 100 people on the board in total. We had 12 voting members. Those were the managers, and then we had about 50 people that were the foot soldiers, and then there were these adjunct members who were sort of subject matter experts who could help us with particular problems or issues, but it would kind of come and go as needed.
So can you describe kind of what your initial charter was and what you talked a little bit about, okay, we want to set these standards, everything is inconsistent, it's not coming out the quality that we want. So what were the different components that you needed to address in order to kind of get to that end goal of having more consistency and quality content across all of these different web properties?
So there was I guess I chaired the within the board there were several councils, and I chaired the Content Quality Council. So, you know, the idea was to set the standards and then develop education and other resources to help to comply or help teams comply with those standards.
What were some of the other councils?
There was the Search and Syndication Council, which I later chaired. That was all about trying to get, again, it was a search optimization issue, and then also how to get RSS and other technologies enabled on their pages. There was a Metrics Council, which primarily dealt with how do you use the data that we had to iteratively improve our site. Those are the three main councils within the board.
Okay, great. So talk a little bit then about how you guys were able to kind of identify issues and prioritize them, and just pick an issue, pick any issue, and sort of walk me through how it was addressed with the team members that you had in place.
Yeah, so kind of the one that stared me in the face, because I came from an organization where I was actually an editor of a publishing engine, and I couldn't really use the style guide as it was because it was so high level and didn't have any real guidance within it, and what guidance it had lacked the kind of, I mean, it didn't lack, it lacked the audience understanding. I think it was just sort of, here's how you publish content, and if you build it, they will come, kind of. Whereas I thought we needed something that was here, kind of a level set on, here's the audience, here's how you communicate with them, here's what they expect. Let's you know, sort of user-centric content. And so that was the first challenge, was building this resource out, this style guide that ultimately led to a whole bunch of other efforts. But that was kind of like, if people don't have one standard to rally around, then we're never going to be consistent.
And where did that style guide live? Once it was sort of created, where did you guys put it?
So we have a whole standard site for all web-related things, from design and coding and you know, pattern libraries and that sort of stuff. Information architecture, and so we put the content standard site right in there. And then we also have a council that deals specifically with style and usage issues across the enterprise, and they continue to work to update the site, but only in the sense that we just link to what they do, and their stuff kind of happens automatically, and it's kind of pulled in through an RSS feed into the site that we built.
Is there any, who's policing that then? I mean, if you guys put all this time and energy and resource into creating this guide and then obviously maintaining it over time, who's policing all the different content creators who have apparently created 3 million URLs in the last 3 years to ensure that those standards are being met?
Well, that's a very good question. The answer, I think, is mostly no one. I mean, We don't. It's more of a giving them incentive to do it the right way, as opposed to enforcing our will upon them. Mostly because IBM is kind of built organically, in the sense that every business unit and brand has its own funding and its own priorities. And if you try to enforce your will upon them, I mean, it's not going to be effective. You can try. We did try it one time, and all it did was create a lot of bad will. And really, I think that was the board before mine that it took a long time for me to generate any kind of credibility, because that board really just pissed everybody off and didn't get anything done anyway, because everybody just, you know, reacted negatively against it.
What kind of things did you do to rebuild, or to maybe build for the first time, goodwill among your different partners?
Well, I think the main thing was just, you know, how can we being very helpful and help in that. I mean, you know, doing content audits, you know, gratis, just and you know, how can we improve? So I did a bunch of like, well, I call them case studies, but I would just go and help an organization, like we have a mid-market team, and they had some issues, and so I went and, you know, basically audited their pages and gave them a list of recommendations, and then we made sure that we tested before and after so that we could see how effective the changes were, and then we just kept doing that for different, and the more of those we did, the more popular they became, until finally that was sort of like, we need to hire people to do those audits and to do that work.
That's great. I'm going to sidetrack you just a little bit because you talked about measuring the success of those efforts. And one of the biggest questions that I get when I'm out talking about content strategy is what kind of metrics are companies using to measure content success and, you know, the dreaded ROI? You know, one of the difficulties with this, obviously, too, is that whenever changes are made to a site or any other interactive property, you know, is it the design? Is it the content quality? Is it where, is it the transactional, you know, whatever? Can you talk a little bit about the metrics that were used or that you proposed with regard to, you know, okay, here are the things that we're bringing to the table that we think would be useful and effective. And okay, here's how we're presenting results about how that did have a positive impact.
Yeah, so I can say what we had at the time, which was fairly limited. It was primarily just tracking the events on the page. So how many people clicked, how many people bounced, and where did they click, and what are the value of those clicks? We kind of more or less arbitrarily assigned values to the clicks depending on, like, if they clicked in the masthead, that basically meant that the page wasn't relevant to them, but something on IBM.com was. If they bounced, then, you know, it was irrelevant. And we would kind of base our guidance on how relevant we thought the clicks were. So if it was a center pane, middle of the page, something, a link that stands out, and then they click that, then, you know, we gave that a high value. And then we would sort of count those up and determine to what extent the page was effective. But ultimately, it had to all come to, in the marketing organization, down to leads. So we have forms and things that people fill out, and we track how many were initiated, how many were completed, and really where did they come from in the first place. So if they came from organic search and they filled out a form and they completed it, you know, that's a high value interaction, and we can kind of give the percentages of how many people did that. If they came from paid search, it was a different percentage. And we kind of tracked them based on the referral data and then ultimately what they did when they came.
Great. Now, I've never really asked you this question. Were you, as editor-in-chief, were you overseeing just sort of marketing and product content, or were you also responsible for overseeing all of the technical support and help content? Because I know that that's probably like the majority of the content that's available on all those, on all your properties.
My primary role was to help the marketing content organizations, but I had come from the technical side, so I had deep contacts over there. And one of the things that I did was basically consolidated a lot of the resources. So, for example, we had our own style guide, and then, I mean, in terms of style and usage guidance, and then the technical organizations had their own style and usage council, and that council is very rigorous and had years and years of very good thought leadership that they built around it. In fact, they've just published a style guide through IBM Press that I think rivals Microsoft style guide. And so I said, well, let's just not try to replicate or duplicate that work. Let's just link to it and build the sort of feeds into our page. So those are the kinds of things I did too. I tried to make sure that there was consistency, not just within marketing, but across the enterprise.
I'm really anxious to get into having you talk about your current role and why you transitioned over to it. But I actually want to sidetrack just a little bit and talk about if you have any insights about how the technical communications community is sort of responding to this tidal wave of excitement around content strategy. What I have noticed and what we've had a lot of conversation about in the community is that the TechCom folks seem to be reacting to content strategy like, I've been doing this for 15 years. I don't see what the big deal is. There's no, you know, why have we not gotten any recognition all this time? And now all of a sudden it's the marketers who are co-opting the term and so on. So there doesn't necessarily seem to be, I'm going to say, an enormous amount of goodwill within that community. What we're finding is that once people actually introduce themselves into the conversation and engage in the conversation, there's so many necessary things that the burgeoning content strategy community has to learn from TechCom and the decades of experience that they've had, that it seems a shame that there would be any tension even in the first place. Have you had any experience like that when you went in as a, you know, representative of the Marcom side of things? Did you meet with any resistance? And if so, how did you bridge that?
Yeah, well, I can say that, you know, marketing content strategists don't have the best reputation among tech comm people in general. And I think part of that is it kind of reflects the audiences that we serve. So in tech comm, you know, anything hypey is automatically rejected, and it has to be totally transparent. Just state the facts, no influence, and it, you know, I mean, if you influence, it has to be extremely well argued and with numbers and you know, hard facts. Whereas in marketing, I mean, we tend to use a little bit of hyperbole here and looser language, more metaphors and things like that. And if you come from the development side and you know what the audience wants, and you see the stuff that has, you know, flowery language or you know, metaphorical forms of speech, you're going to think ill about the people who wrote that. And I think the same is true on the other side, is like, okay, sometimes these rules that you have for your audience are way too rigid for to be able to tell the story we need to tell in marketing. And in fact, you know, when we did the consolidation of resources, I had to build an entire section onto the style and usage database just for marketing exceptions, because there are all kinds of things that are just unacceptable in tech comm settings that are, you know, common practice and, in fact, in some cases desirable in marketing. And we wanted to make sure that those flexibilities were built into the system. So I understand it. I think the whole thing about getting personal and I've been doing this for 15 years and whatever, I don't really want to touch on that too much. I've seen some of it, but, you know, I think it's just that, you know, when somebody does something very well for a very long time, and then all of a sudden marketers kind of come in and say, well, I want to do that too, and they do it better. I don't know. I don't want to speculate.
Yeah, I understand. I didn't mean to put you in that particular position. Yeah. I think that more what I was leaning towards, and I would suggest it's not necessarily that marketers do content strategy better. I think that they are better probably at advertising the fact that they do content strategy and just the way mm-hmm. that they talk about it, and maybe making it more palatable to kind of the general business person, whether they sit in marketing or in HR or in corporate communications or if they're an SME or whatever the case may be. So great. So I think that too, part of the content strategy conversation in general is really to begin creating common ground between all these different areas of specialty so that we can all kind of come together and talk about how our work can inform a holistic content strategy, and then how that content strategy can sort of address our needs on a consistent basis. So that is really probably the gap that I'm talking about bridging.
Yeah, no, I think that's perfectly appropriate. And, you know, if you need any help with a case study or something of how we did it in IBM, I'd be happy to help with that.
Oh, there are all kinds of case studies I'd like to have from IBM to help with all kinds of things, James. We'll take that off the record.
Okay,
so let's talk now about sort of when you hit the point that you were ready to kind of morph your role or transition out of your role and into your current role.
Yeah, so, you know, and I'd seen this throughout my career, but it just wasn't a priority, or at least for the people who were making the decisions at the time. But, you know, we spend a lot of money on content, not just on the development and the writing and all that, but, you know, hosting is expensive and maintenance is expensive and so forth. And we weren't really getting a lot of, in a lot of cases, you know, I think 95% of our content gets poor, I would say poor visitation, whereas only about 5% is you know, gets the kind of results that we're hoping for, and that's not good. So why is that? Well, you know, it was search. I worked in the previous place I worked at within IBM before I became editor in chief. We created, you know, 280 white papers one year, and I edited every single one line by line. And I think that the total number of hits we got in that year for those white papers was like 150 or something. And
holy,
it just was
crap.
Enormously depressing to spend an entire year editing you know, what, 280 40-page white papers and get only 150 visits. So we went through, and it was just a question of fixing the PDFs so that they were search-enabled. And the next year, they got 150,000 visits. So that to me really was like, wow, what can you do if we did this across the entire enterprise to make everybody's content search enabled, and then build tooling and stuff so that it's more or less automatic? It's not something that we need to spend a lot of resources on. It's just it's part of the standard, part of the package of resources that we're developing for, you know, as part of the style guide. So that was what I did. I started off as editor in chief, building five courses with the help of a lot of people, of course. And then that led to the book. And after the book was published, it's like, well, let's just focus you, James, on this one thing, trying to get search, consistent and uniform across the enterprise. So that's been the job I've been doing since the book was published.
Let's talk about the book. Why don't you start off by sort of identifying where you saw the gap in the current literature that's out, and your approach to it, and kind of your core issues that are addressed in it. Just go ahead and go off about the book for a while.
Well, you know, we have another book in IBM Press called Search Engine Marketing Incorporated by a couple of people I respect a lot, Mike Moran and Bill Hunt. And it was published first in 2005, and then the second edition came out in 2009. And, you know, I read that cover to cover as I was making the courses. And it seemed like the one thing that was missing was a sense of how to write for the web so that you're writing will tend to be search enabled. That it's their perspective was, you know, write for the user first, and then just do all this coding stuff to make sure that everything is in its place so that Google can find and index and ultimately serve your content in a search engine result. And that's very valuable stuff, because there's a lot of little tactics that you can do to really improve your search effectiveness that way. But ultimately, if you're using words and phrases that your target audience are not using in talking about the same sort of categories of products and services that you're trying to promote, you don't get the kind of traffic. You can do everything on the coding level that you that is described in that book, but if you're not using the right words and phrases, and if you're not really thinking in terms of from a customer's perspective, even before you start writing, but sort of with the building blocks of your content, you're not going to attract customers. You might talk to the customers you already have who are familiar with your nomenclature, but if you're not using your client nomenclature, you're not going to attract new clients. And so that was the premise of the book, is that let's find out what the whole audience is, not just those who are familiar with your nomenclature, but the whole audience out on the web, and let's write content for them and attract them to your site. And then I think that if you do, they're sort of pre-qualified to want to engage with your content. And so that's sort of the way that the book was set up. It started off as an MS thesis that I worked on, in 2008, and then, you know, I worked with a couple of the people who helped me with my courses, Frank Donatone and Cynthia Fischel, to write the rest of the chapters that, you know, really focus on this, what we call outside-in marketing.
So this is, I don't know if you're aware, Lou Rosenfeld actually just released a book called Site Search Analytics. And he, you know, one of the main areas of research that he's really encouraging people to look at are the actual terms that people are searching on the site. When you talk about kind of going out onto the web and finding out what people are really looking for and what they're interested in, writing to that, can you talk a little bit about that approach? Because, you know, the content marketing movement, that's what everybody's saying, you know, go out and give people the content that they want, which I don't know necessarily how that's different from what they've been saying, but can you talk a little bit about what your process is that you recommend, or ideas that you throw out about actually getting at that key information?
Yeah, well, so I think it really it's going to have to transform the whole organization, because kind of the way that marketing is done traditionally is, you know, some people sit in a room and say, how do our products differentiate themselves from the marketplace? We want to, you know, sort of like you said, well, how does my book fit in with the literature in the sense that it's saying something new? How does our stuff say new things? And so they come up with branded words, and they just promote those branded words, and if the customers don't understand what they're talking about, it never works. So you kind of have to start with the very conception of content, what we call market intelligence, using market intelligence as the vehicle for keyword research, to build keyword research into the market intelligence field. And that includes social media listening. It includes, you know, competitive analysis and so forth. And then everything flows from that, because market intelligence builds reports about, you know, how we can fit within the market and what are the products and services we should be building and developing and naming and how to name them. And ultimately, if that's done right in the front end, then the copywriting and the content strategy and the information architecture can all kind of flow from that you're aligning everything to what the market is telling you. The market is your audience, basically, and that's kind of the approach that we're trying to take within IBM.
So let's say that I have a company with 20 people.
And
yeah, just for
which
example.
You happen to.
Yes, exactly. Yes. But let's say I have a company of 20, let's say I'm a nonprofit organization. Let's say that I'm a nonprofit organization that pairs rescued animals with foster homes, for example. I'll just throw that out. And I want some market intelligence. What do I do? Where do I go to get that? What are some ideas? What are some activities that I can participate in that are sort of straightforward ideas?
Well, I mean, the first is keyword research. So there are a number of tools that are free, you know, AdWords, Google Insights, you know, are two. I start with those. I look for do a bunch of research on the words and look at which words have the most demand in Google. And then there's all kinds of keyword or social media listening programs. You can plug those words into and say, listen around these words. Let's see, you know, which ones have a lot of hashtags or whatever. And from that, you can generate reports about, you know, what people need. What are their interests? How what are they? You know, and you can also build sentiment analysis. So if these are good things that people really want, okay, so that's good. And then you can just do the searches, and you can find out by searching on those words who the competition is, what's the the footprint of available sources. You might find that somebody else is doing exactly what you propose, and it's probably be better to partner with them than to actually, you know, start your own thing that competes with them or whatever. Where is ultimately you find your niche by doing the research first and figuring out, you know, what the market, and this is like, you know, writing a business case or whatever for a new business. You do all that due diligence up front. You find out what the market actually is, and then you try to fill that niche. And that's kind of the way I would approach it. And then content just flows from that. I mean, you know, you get the words, you find out what the phrases that they use in social media, you find out what, you know, again, what are they interested in? So that helps you prioritize your efforts from a content perspective and build out, you know, compelling sites that can draw new customers and or in the case of a nonprofit, you know, whatever it is, it's helping, let's say, you know, an animal shelter, it's helping people find pets, it's helping people who need assistance with, you know, they can't handle the pet that they have, so let's see if we can find somebody to adopt it or whatever. You know, there's a lot of stuff that you can do just by basically doing research in Google to understand what the market is.
So that is all stuff I think that people, it is so simple and it is so straightforward, but I think when people hear SEO or, you know, search engine optimization, some people, their heads explode and they're like, oh, we need a consultant for that. Can you talk a little bit more about taking kind of this basic information and how that can really work into a content strategy. Because I think that one of the things that we're seeing is that when people are sitting down to talk about a content strategy, you know, and that can start with a site audit, it can start with making recommendations about getting rid of redundant, outdated, or trivial content. But, you know, if we're not including the search engine strategists in the conversation, we may not understand why that's there. We may not, you know, it may actually have value that from a, just even a user-centered experience, we're not clearly aware of, although I don't know if I've ever seen that actually happen. But, you know, something that has to happen then between the search and between the search research, identifying those core keywords, and actually moving into creating the content, there are a number of different considerations that need to be made. Everything from like an editorial calendar to resource allocation to creating those standards and guidelines into, you know, being able to identify through content modeling really what those metadata attributes and schemas should look like. These are all like extraordinarily different skill sets that, you know, like a small company is not going to be able to necessarily have covered. But I'm really interested to talk about, I'm assuming that all of those skill sets exist within IBM. Can you talk a little bit about how, if you're doing any work to kind of bring those folks together and begin to have a common conversation around the actual creation and governance of the content?
Yeah, so our concept right now is we have a digital lab in which we have agile teams that are working intensively on one part of the site. So I'm on the agile team for the cloud computing, and we have the sort of our strategic priorities are laid out, and then each one of these teams will be working on their sites And then I'm just starting a digital lab content board. Sorry about the noise. Digital lab content board in which all of the people who work on content for those sites can share best practices and common templates and standards and all that kind of stuff. Well, the thing about Agile is that everybody needs to be a generalist. You can't just be, I'm just an editor or I'm just a writer or whatever, in order to do the job, because there's always work that needs to be done you may not be an expert at it, but you can do it. And you kind of have to jump in and do it. So that's one of the ways that we kind of get around the problem of work like an SEO specialist, you know, getting distributed across the team. You train everybody in it. It isn't rocket science. It's really not that hard. You know, people get intimidated by it, but if they just start doing it, and then, you know, the whole thing is let the data decide what your decision should be. So from, you know, before things are published, that's the what we call a constituent intent model. That's the keyword research. After it's published, then the website metrics kind of tell you what's working and what isn't, and you iteratively build it as you go. And this digital lab is sort of going to be the center of competence for IBM, web digital activities, and hopefully the rest of the company will rally around that, and we can, you know, say this is what we did here. Here's a case study. Here's some courses that we built. How can we help? Let's do some consulting. So that's the way that we're trying to do it now. Instead of doing the old enterprise-wide content board that we did before, we're trying to just build a center of competency and have the company rally around it.
Talk to me a little bit about the whole agile content strategy thing is a completely different conversation that I'm really interested in. There was a killer discussion about it on the Google group maybe 2 months ago, but maybe we'll talk about that next time. Can you talk a little bit instead about the concepts that you covered a few minutes ago that are about sort of like approaching content creation with the audience in mind for search optimization? Can this is something now that SEO is like kind of bleeding into this whole content marketing movement. I actually, somebody has introduced the term content marketing optimization, which sort of makes me want to bang my head against the wall. But can you talk a little bit about how the concepts and principles put forth in your book, how are they unique to your position versus sort of, you know, the 18 million other SEO books that have been written over the last, you know, 8 years or whatever?
Yeah, I mean, I think that the main thing is a lot of the books, you know, there are like 25 books that get a lot of sales. Mine isn't one of them yet, but I'm hoping that talk about SEO. And I think that, you know, it was primarily like, this is an after the fact tactic. This is something that is just a process that gets inserted in the content flow that, after everything's written and it's designed and we have wireframes and blah blah blah, let's check to make sure that the content can be findable through search. And so we'd bring, you know, the SEO consultant would go in there and audit the pages and find all these problems and fix them, and then lo and behold, you know, you have a more search optimized page. And it all sounds good, but ultimately, after trying to do that for a while, I realized that you know, more often than not, the words and phrases that I would find through keyword research in my consulting activities were not the words and phrases that were sort of baked into the content. And trying to retrofit that content for those words and phrases that the keyword research tools were telling me we should use, it never really worked. It was like trying to, I don't know, put a lay on a pig or something. It just doesn't work. And mostly because if you happen to rank well for the words that you stick in there, people will come to the page and, oh, this doesn't look relevant to what I was searching for, and bounce off because the content, you know, was not built with those words in it. And the other thing that might happen is, and more often than not, this is actually the case, Google won't rank you well for those words anyway, because Google's algorithm pays a lot of attention to things that, you know, you have to have them sort of baked right in if you're gonna get ranked in Google, especially with highly competitive words. So that's why in our book we emphasize starting from the very beginning, the inception of content, the content process, and building SEO best practices right in from the start. And I think that's new, that's novel in the literature. Everything else that I've read has been the sort of after the fact perspective that, you know, it might sound good, but it really doesn't work very well.
Yeah, that is actually, you know, some of the concerns that I have about what's being preached by the content marketing gurus who are, you know, suddenly coming out of the woodwork is again, sort of this idea that if you build it, they will come. I mean, we had that with blogs, we had that with community forums, we had that with social media outlets, and I guess I'm interested in your perspective on that particular approach. My concern with that is, of course, that they're preaching this to organizations who don't necessarily have the time or the skill set or even the high-level strategy in place to really be able to understand what that means and how it can have a positive impact on their business. My concern is that starting with that keyword research and making that integral to the very upfront content strategy process, which I fully agree with, by the way. But my concern then is that recommendations may inform the creation of more content in order to win those search results or those search rankings than maybe is feasible or would necessarily over the long term support business objectives. Can you talk just a little bit about how to help organizations or even their executive leadership kind of avoid that trap in that perspective?
Yeah, I think that one of the things the SIM informs you, the SIM, I mean, is the constituent intent model, informs you to do is to prioritize your efforts and to focus on the words and phrases that are the highest value for your audience. And everything else, then all those, you know, longer tail words can be, you know, supplemental. And only if there's time and it makes sense in the context of the business that we would have a piece of content that you know, served that purpose. But ultimately, you know, it's all about priorities. And really, yeah, less is more in a lot of cases when it comes to, especially to smaller organizations. You know, I think that I've got a stakeholder right now who said, "Oh, I want, you know, 50 white papers a month or something, just an arbitrary number." And it's like, well, how many of these are actually needed? I mean, are people actually, you know, asking for these things? So, you know, that's one of the things by what we call outside in, is it really, it gauges what the interest is in the audience, and then you can gear your whole content effort to the most interesting things, the things that you know, based on your resources. If you don't have a lot of resources, then just focus at the high level and you know, put it down on your editorial calendar for another day when you get to the lower levels in the keyword research map.
Yeah, you know, and I guess that's what I'm talking about, is how to sort of help folks who are going to ask for 50 white papers kind of adjust their perspective to say, you know, it's not necessarily the quantity of 50 white papers you want to be going after. And, you know, actually, one of the complaints about it within the content strategy community actually is that there is so much focus on marketing content, when obviously the world of content is, you know, 100 times that. But that doesn't seem to be, you know, if you work in tech comm, nobody is going to say to you, "I want 100 white papers," and like measure your success or your performance on that quantitatively. Or if you're in, you know, HR, nobody is going to say, "Listen, I want 80 landing pages on the employee intranet to, you know, whatever." And so the measure of performance is so different across the board. And that, you know, that's just something I guess I really have empathy for the marketing community when they are talking about more content and content marketing and you know, sort of the battle cry that they've had for what seems like years now.
I think a lot of those tensions between, especially between marketing and tech comm, have to do with the culture in which those activities grew up. I think marketing grew up in a print-centric culture where it was like, okay, let's publish a magazine every month, and then when the magazine's done, we'll just publish another one, and we'll do another one after that, and just, you know, publish it and forget it, and never worry about updating or improving it or retiring it, let alone. And in tech comm, it kind of grew up as an online centered universe, at least a lot of the time. And so there's the sense of, you know, less is more, and minimalism is just part of that culture, and so people are measured more on how effective the content is and not about volume. And I think that's where a big part of the clash is. And that's one of the things that I spent probably too much time in the book about is that the web is really a whole different animal than print. And we can't take a print-centric approach to web content and be successful.
I was just remembering, as you say that, you were overseeing print publication when I first heard your name, which was back in like what, 98 probably, when you were doing Computer User magazine or newspaper here in the Twin Cities, isn't that right?
Yeah, it was the Twin Cities was the home base, but we had 38 markets or something at one point. Yeah, that was my job. I was editor in chief of Computer User, and we did a magazine, and then we did a website. And the website at one time, you know, I'm not bragging, but it had 1.5 million unique visits a month. And how do we do that? Those two things side by side, and that's I think where a lot of the insights in the print versus web discussion that are in the book come from, is that it was a whole different animal working with the web than it was with the print. We couldn't just say, okay, let's just publish our magazine online and leave it at that. The users are completely different. The audience was similar, and in some cases overlapping, but the whole use case, it was different, and so we had to adjust our model to that. And I took those insights to IBM when I started.
Yeah, great. As you were talking, I actually, as you started talking about that, I was like, oh, I'm going to forget this other point, but I want to go back to it, which is that I actually, as a consumer, as someone who enjoys my technical toys, one of my primary complaints on any of the websites is that I cannot find relevant support content when I go in. And it's because the search is broken in those databases. So I guess I'm really interested. The expertise and the things that you're talking about specifically seem like, even though you're overseeing them for the marketing arm, seem like they would be so relevant and so important to the TechCom and the support teams. Is that, are you seeing now within IBM that there is a larger focus on that specifically?
Oh yes, it started about the time that I worked on those courses, and I had all these ties with the TechCom area because like I said that's where I started at IBM, and I had a lot of friends and they were really interested in it. So I ended up training more people on that side of the house than in the marketing area, and the concepts are very similar. I think in TechCom it was more of an information architecture audience because they were trying to develop the words and phrases that would be part of the whole interaction design and not just the content. But we've since developed a whole. I mean, we partnered with them to put a whole new masthead search on our site and to build an application called Knowledge Center that is really based on search. So every piece of content within that application will be basically search first. So I think we've done actually more, I think, on the TechCom side than we have on the marketing.
Good. I'm going to buy more IBM stuff then.
Yeah.
Excellent.
Hey. I don't think you have a house big enough for a Z series, but.
I've got a lot of room in my basement, James. Okay. I'm sure that
and
my kids
nice and
will
cool
understand.
Down there, so yeah, you won't need to air condition your data center in your basement.
Exactly. See, it's all going according to plan. Hey, the last topic that I want to chat with you about a little bit is how you have seen content strategy and the conversation around it evolve over the last 3 years. You were one of the earliest people, or in sort of my research and in digging around and seeing who was talking about what. You were one of the very first people I spoke to, and so I know for a fact that you've been involved in this conversation for a long time. Can you talk a little bit about if you look ahead around content strategy? I hear you typing, James.
Sorry. So I'm actually supposed to lead a call and right now, so I'm just telling somebody to log in with my passwords.
Good. I will say James has patiently waited for 35 minutes while my entire recording set crashed. So yes, I am keeping you over time. I'm going to talk to you for 5 more minutes though.
Sure.
And what I'm interested in hearing from you is specifically what should we be worried about one of the things I'm concerned about, even just with regard to ongoing education and continuing to push the conversation forward, is that we have sort of this population of people that have been doing this work for 10, 12, 15 years. Then we have sort of the mid-level people who have a really similar skill set who are interested in sort of crossing over and just be doing more of like the strategic level consultation. And then we have this very, very large population of people that are like, I need content strategy. How can I go get it? How can I, you know, staff for it in-house and so on? That's one of the things that I'm most concerned about moving forward. What, as sort of a member of what I would consider kind of the expert community, what are some of the questions or the challenges that we need to be focused on moving forward that are going to need to be tackled over like the next 12 to 18 months?
I mean, I think part of it is understanding the discipline as a discipline and not just as a collection of skills that, you know, because people come to content strategy from information architecture and from TechCom and from marketing and from, you know, copywriting of various sorts and all different kinds of disciplines, mostly because it's, you know, it's something that is very valuable for companies and companies need it. And so it's like, here's a job, I can take it. And then they get excited and they start to learn all the skills that they need, you know, to fill in the gaps, and they become content strategists. And there's a whole collection of skills that sort of like are the baseline skills that everybody needs. And that would constitute the discipline? And then how do we build, like, the what's the literature? And it'd be really cool if we had, I think, if we had a journal or something that kind of centered on some topics that were consistently written. We have the Google group, of course, that helps. But that's, I think, really kind of thinking of it more as a discipline. You know, Lean Jones and I were tweeting about, well, what are we going to do about having courses for people who are, you know, trying to graduate in content, and there's no content strategy courses? How are they going to make their way in the world when it's, you know, such a vital part of companies? And so let's help, you know, partner with some academic institutions to build some standard courses. Stuff like that, I think, is what needs to happen in the next 12 to 18 months to mature a collection of skills into a discipline.
Awesome. That's all I needed from you. You can go do your call now.
Okay. Thank you.
Hey, James, thank you so much for spending time with us. James is the global search lead for IBM.com and the co-author of Audience Relevance in Search, Targeting Web Audiences with Relevant Content. It has been a pleasure. Thanks for your time today, James.
Oh, the pleasure is all mine. Thank you.
And now that we are back on track with Content Talks, keep an eye out for next week's podcast, which you will find, as always, posted on 5x5.tv, as well as the Brain Traffic blog. See you then.